Welcome to the Shir in Sfarno, Parshas Vayikra. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Fran and Marty Shulman, marking the yard site tonight of Fran's brother's yard site, Hersh Tzvi Ben Yaakov Meir, Shomash and Avin Aliyah, Shisi Moch Nachas Ruach, from the Torah Mitzvahs, and Maisim Tovim, that the family is involved in. Last night we began speaking about the Sfarno's depiction of some of the basic principles of Karbanos. He spends time at the beginning of the first parak of Vayikra outlining some of the basic principles of Karbanos, and he spoke so far about the essence of Karban being the idea of contrition, that the person who's bringing the Karban feels that he's lowering himself, humbling himself in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He spoke about how there are certain types of animals and birds which are acceptable as karbanos, others are not, and that was true according to the Sfarno even before the Torah was given. That's how he interprets the story of Noach. Somebody who is a mushumud, somebody who's a renegade Jew, is ineligible to bring a karban. Again, that's a din from the Gemara, Rashi quotes, but the Sfarno's twist on that is that that can help us understand why the Ribbono Shel Olam did not accept the karban of Kayin. Kayin was a heretic. He believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was really truly unaware. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him, "Ei Hevel Achicha," what happened to your brother Hevel? You know, he didn't realize that it was a rhetorical question on the part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu really might not know the answer to that question. Those are some of the things that we spoke also yesterday about the difference between a Karban Ola and a Karban Chatos. Both come for Kapara, as an atonement. The Karban Ola is Mechapir for Huhuri Halev, for when a person has thoughts which are sinful and inappropriate. And as such, as the thoughts are intangible, the entire Karban is turned into something intangible. The entire Karban is burnt. As opposed to the Karban Chatos, which atones for tangible sins that are carried out with the person's limbs. So the best way to atone for that, says the Sfarno, is not to destroy or burn the limbs of the Karban, but rather to give the limbs of the Karban to the Kohanim to eat, because with the Kohanim eating the limbs of the Karban, those limbs, which represent the limbs of the sinner in which he did these Averos, those limbs will now give strength to the Kohanim who are performing mitzvos and teaching Klal Yisrael to perform mitzvos properly. So again, that's a summary of some of the topics which we spoke about yesterday. The Sfarno continues his analysis of the different karbanos and the details of the karbanos and what symbolic significance those details have. So he says, a karban chatos. We know that the Torah in Parshas Vayikra speaks about a Karban Chatos versus a Karban Asham. Right? There's a Chatos is a sin offering, and Asham is a guilt offering. And on the surface, it's not immediately clear why there should be two types of Karbanos. I mean, a Chatos is for a sin, and Asham is for a sin. So why should there be a distinction made between a Chatos and an Asham? So he says, "Of Yos Paul Hara Haroy Liskapir Bekarbon Ksaso in Kovid Avon Kemochai Vekriso Ksaso Kalmiza Avolim Eza Chilul Bakodesh." So there are different types of sins, says the Sfarno. Some sins are very serious sins, like sins that potentially could involve kares, if carried out bemezid, if carried out intentionally. Those are very, very serious sins. There are other sins where the sin itself may not be inherently such a great sin, but the sin involves what he calls chilul bakodesh, defiling something holy. So he says, when you look at that distinction, the distinction between a very serious sin versus a sin which is about defiling that which is sacred, that can explain the difference between the chatos and the asham. The chatos is appropriate for the first type of sin, which is distinguished by its seriousness. In other words, We know the general rule is that if a person violates a sin, which he would have gotten kares for if he did intentionally, but he does that sin unintentionally, meaning he doesn't really fully realize that he's carrying out the sin. If he would have violated Yom Kippur intentionally, so he would have gotten the punishment of kares. So he forgot that it was Yom Kippur, and he ate, you know, without thinking. He sat down to breakfast that morning, and, you know, it only dawned on him, you know, halfway through the third course that, you know, I knew there was a reason I wasn't eating today, right? So he unintentionally, mistakenly, again, it's a certain amount of negligence, but again, it's still not eating deliberately on Yom Kippur. So in such a case, he bring a karban chatos. So because the severity of the sin demands a chatos, what's the word chatos? L'chatei es hanefesh. He says the word chatos is related to the idea of purification. L'chatei means to purify. And the sin that the person has committed that requires a chatos is such an intense sin that the very neshama itself has been sullied, has been dirtied in a significant way. You need to cleanse the neshama. So the karban chatos is not really translated as a sin offering. It's a cleansing offering. It's a karban that cleanses the neshama that has been so dirtied by its exposure to this terrible sin. Ulchelek hasheni. So the second type of sin, which involves chilul hakodesh, defiling something which is holy, yeyus ha'asham. For that, the asham karbon is appropriate, the guilt offering. Lahavir chilul asher asham lo. And that is to not so much remove the defilement from his soul, because it's not, again, every sin defiles the soul, but the worst sins really defile the soul. In the case of the karban asham, when the primary impact of the sin the person has committed is not so much on the person himself, but rather on the kedusha, on that which was sacred, which has been defiled in some way. In both cases, this is the karban together with tshuva. V'tara achas lohem. And they have a similar kind of, in that regard, a chatas and an asham, both are only effective if they're accompanied by tshuva. Just want to flesh this out a little bit, because again, typically the Svarno speaks in very, very terse language over here. A typical example of an asham is when a person commits the sin of me'ila, making use of something that belongs to Hekdesh, that belongs to the property of the Beis HaMikdash. He picks it up and he uses it for his own personal purposes. So that clearly is Chilul HaKodesh. He takes something which is sacred and he uses it for his own purposes. He defiles that which is sacred. So in some cases, you know, the Svarno seems to be implying, fundamentally, the prohibition of me'ilo, though obviously it's a sin, it doesn't impact on his neshama in the same way that eating on Yom Kippur would. Eating on Yom Kippur is a much more fundamental, a worse sin, that again, if he did it intentionally, would bring about kares. Nonetheless, when the person uses something that belongs to Hekdesh inappropriately, so it's an asham, it's a guilt, it's something that he's done wrong. So in the case of karban chatos, the word chatos refers to what the karban does, it purifies him. In the case of karban asham, the word asham refers to the fact that he's guilty, he sinned, he did something wrong, but the purpose of the asham is not so much to focus on fixing him, the person who sinned, but rather making good, somehow making up the chilul hakodesh, the desecration of that which is sacred, which was carried out over here. Interesting to note this Svarno and contrast it with the position of the Ramban, which the Ramban also puts forward in Parshas Vayikra, again towards the end of Parshas Vayikra, when the concept of Asham is discussed. The Ramban relates the word Asham to Shmama, which means destruction, desolation. And the Ramban says that the types of sins which bring with them the requirement to bring a karban asham are such terrible sins that on a certain level they would destroy the person's neshama. They would you know, make the person desolate inside. And for that reason, it doesn't suffice to bring a chatos. You need an asham, which is more powerful. It addresses a worse stain on the soul than the stain which is caused by the sin associated with a karban chatos. It seems like the Sfarno understands exactly the opposite of the Ramban. The Ramban seems to say that a karban asham speaks to a sin which is far worse than the sin associated with a karban chatos. Again, the sin of a karban asham is shmama, is about destruction and desolation and, you know, all kinds of terrible things. The Sfarno, for his part, seems to say that the karban chatos really addresses a sin which is far worse. The karban asham, it's not so much that the sin, relatively speaking, is so bad. Again, all sins are bad, but, you know, relatively speaking, it's not as bad as the sin associated with the karban chatos, but there's some kind of something sacred which has been violated, and in order to somehow make good the violation of the sacred, you need the karban asham. The most obvious example of that is me'ilah, you know, is making use of something that belongs to Hekdesh inappropriately. That obviously is chilul bakodesh, is misusing or desecrating something which is sacred. There are other types of ashamos as well. If you say Ezer Mekomet in the morning, you list off all the different types of ashamos. Asham gezelos, right? When a person steals something by force from somebody else, so he has to bring a karban asham as part of his kapara, as part of his atonement. How is that chilul hakodesh? How is that violating, you know, something sacred? So perhaps one can say that, you know, what the Sfarno would say over here is that property rights are sacred. I mean, a person has a right to their property. If I walk over to you and I, you know, punch you in the face and take your possessions and run off, so I'm violating your property. I'm taking something that doesn't belong to me. But it has to be a little bit more than that, because there are two types of thievery. There's gezela and geneva. Gezela means when you take something from somebody by force in a very public way, like a mugging or something of that nature. And geneva is to be a burglar. You know, you break into the person's house and you take the item, but without confronting the person directly. So you have to bring a karban asham when it comes to gzela. There is no concept of a karban asham, however, when it comes to geneva. It's only the public standoff with the person that requires the asham. So why is that? It must be something beyond just property rights, because in both cases, you're violating the person's property rights. So maybe the difference is, again, this is all speculative, we're just trying to build on these few words in the Sfarno, but maybe the difference is that in addition to violating property rights when it comes to gezela, you're also violating a certain social contract of behavior. In other words, for society to function, you know, we need people to feel confident that they can walk down the street and not be accosted by other people who are going to take their possessions. You know, it's also nice that I shouldn't have people break into my house and take my possessions. I'm not happy if people do that. But gezela contributes to the breakdown of society, I think, to a greater extent than geneva does. Again, both of them show a lack of respect for property rights, but gezela, taking something by force from people in a confrontational kind of way, also shows a lack of respect.